frightened. Tallow stared out through the dark window at his own reflection. I knew he was wishing we had run when we'd had the chance. I looked back at our own personal broker. I knew he was essentially right. What difference did it make? If anything, it made our mission easier. Unlikely as it was, if we somehow survived the clashing of 5 sectors, we would have a clear endgame. Ah, look at the princess, putting it all together. It's almost like I can hear the little voices in her head whispering in unison. Winter, he's doing that thing again, Tallow said. I'm glad the men in my books aren't as thick-headed as you, Tallow, although I guess some of them are, Cedar said as she placed her index finger on her chin, thinking. Winter, please. Tallow wanted to be let in on the secret that wasn't really a secret. Not to us, anyway. Not anymore, at least. Now we know that it remains to be seen whether the overseers run everything. They may or may not. What we do know is that they are not only overseers to distance, but to every sector. But they know about the war. They just told us why we need to fight it. Do they make the same speeches to everyone? Why wouldn't they just make everyone stop fighting? Those are the big questions, sweetheart. Those are the answers we need, Brody said. We've always been told that the overseers are looking out for us, that they are the only line of defense against those that would attack us here in our homes. Now we're finding out that they are the reason we fight at all? How am I supposed to react to this? Tallow was incensed. I had no idea boys could be so dramatic, Cedar whispered to me. You reconcile this on your own time, okay, sweetheart? My advice to you was to stick with your fellow citizens until the end. But now that's changed. Why? How can safety in numbers suddenly become a liability, I asked. You've been drilling it in our heads for months. Yeah, but that was until I found out the other sectors are involved. If it was one-on-one, we would still stick with what I said. Wait, you said the Hylians are the strongest, followed by the Klondikes, the Ferals, then the Brutons, and then us. Wouldn't the Hylians just forget about us and concentrate on the tougher opponent first? All 5 sectors fighting at the same time is unusual, although having more than one combatant has been known to occur. It happened the year before I fought. The Hylians clashed with the Klondikes and the Brutons. I've been thinking on it. I believe the overseers had expected the second strongest army to ally with the weakest, to try and overcome the stronger opponent. What happened was the opposite, though. The stronger two had joined forces, completely annihilating the weaker third before breaking the bond and attacking each other. That is so foolish. It makes no sense, I was in disbelief. If I'm right, that means events and strategies during the war can be manipulated. I've attacked that problem from every angle and have yet to come up with a viable answer. I have to assume that this type of alliance is what will happen again. The Hylians and Klondikes will bond to destroy the Distancians and the Brutons, with the Feral being the wild card. It's not their way to align with anyone. You need to remove yourself from the battlefield as quickly as possible before any deals of engagement are made. Absolutely not, Tallow was indignant. We will not leave the others to die. We can't. You cannot hope to protect them all, Tallow. Your only chance is to run, hide, and find a safe place until such time that you can strike out. It was the first time I'd heard Brody call Tallow by his real name. The situation must be serious. Are you not listening to him? He wants us to leave all of our friends, all the people we grew up with, abandon our whole community to the wolves. What if we made a deal with the Brutons? I asked. I don't know that it would make a difference, Brody said. What if we got the Ferals as well? Cedar asked. The only reason they don't fight amongst themselves is because there's another enemy. You'd never be able to get close enough to them to convince them to join a side. What happened after your area and the Klondikes destroyed the Brutons? I asked. The Hylians crushed the Klondikes. Wouldn't that make the Klondikes want to align with the weaker opponents then? That would be the obvious move. They just won't. They'd consider it beneath them. Listen, "I'm open to ideas," he said as he looked at our shocked faces. "But unless someone comes up with anything better, hiding is going to be your best option. In those first few chaotic days of the new war cycle, hundreds will die. After that, hundreds more over the course of the battle. Defeating any one or even all the other sectors is not going to end the war or change the world. It's just going to make it a little less populated. Meet me tomorrow at the library. Take the day off. You've earned it." I, for one, was looking forward to it. I had calluses on my calluses. My feet were constantly sore. Thankfully, I was not too tired to spend some time heating up some water and taking a proper bath. Cedar had already plopped down on the couch and pulled the book Highlander's Revenge out of her pocket. We learned that the plaid skirt was called a kilt and was favored by the Scottish men back in the 1800s or so. How many years ago that was, we didn't know, but it seemed like ages. The library only kept track of time up to about 2047. Whatever had happened around that time had been catastrophic and sudden, because there'd been no warning, at least not one we could find mentioned in any of the books we had read thus far. I could not convince Tallow that it was most likely not because of the fictional zombies from the first book he had picked up. That night after my bath, I wanted to snuggle with Tallow. He'd become more withdrawn as we trained. I think, in part, because he was intimidated by my skill with the sword. He was thick and pig-headed. The reason I fought so hard was in the hope that somehow I would be strong enough to keep us both alive. I cared not for my own life, not if it was to be without him alongside me. Ironically, instead of that being an attractant, it became a repellent. Brody constantly berated him for being the weakest link amongst us. I could see the pain this was causing him, but he wanted nothing to do with my sympathy, even as I would attempt to dress any wounds he had received. Cedar was completely lost in her book as I walked into Tallow's room, dressed only in the towel I'd used to dry off. He looked up, the words, "get out," clearly starting to form on his lips. He didn't have a chance to say them as I let the towel fall to the ground. My form looked as if it had been carved from granite. The parts of me that should have been soft were hard. My abdomen muscles were toned and sculpted, and my arms, although not large, were also well-defined. I was lithe. I was sinewy. I was dangerous and deadly. I walked toward Tallow, fearful he would reject this new body I found myself in. I was afraid he would not find this figure as attractive as the one I had left behind. His silence was quickly turning my boldness into regret in my mind. I lowered my head, feeling the heat of a prickly blush covering my entire body. That shame was erased as he stood and ran the back of his fingers across my cheek while lowering his head to kiss me passionately. "What about Cedar?" he whispered. "I don't see you wearing a kilt, so we should be fine." Chapter 10 Forbidden Love. The next morning came way too fast. "We gotta go," Cedar said as she barged in. I was on my stomach. Tallow pulled the blanket completely off me to cover himself up. Cedar smiled. "Forbidden love. It's just like in the book I'm reading." "You need to keep quiet about this," I told Cedar, as I tried to grab some of the covers back. "Forbidden love is always kept secret, Winter. Don't you know anything? But there is always the nosy neighbor that seems to find out and lets everyone in church know." "Oh, no, I'm the nosy neighbor now. I want to be the heroine and have Brody wrap his strong arms around me." "Oh, that's just gross," Tallow said. "Cedar, please get out so I can get dressed." "Yeah, yeah, right," she said the words, but made no move toward the door. Tallow had a tighter grip on the covers than he'd ever had on his sword. Apparently he was more concerned with his modesty than his life. When I realized I couldn't get any covers back from him, I stood up to retrieve my clothes. "Wow, Winter, you look like those models on the book covers," Cedar said. "Do I look like that?" She started pulling her shirt off. "No, Tallow and I said together. I quickly finished dressing and pushed her out of the doorway. What? Cedar asked, as I escorted her down the hall. Tallow seemed slightly awkward as we hiked to the library. He didn't say more than a handful of words, although I caught him looking over at me more than once. I didn't know whether I should be flattered or paranoid. Tallow, you haven't said anything to me all morning. I grabbed his hand to slow him down while Cedar walked ahead, nose buried in a book. It was funny to watch her stumble as she came across uneven terrain from time to time. Are you mad at me? Mad at you? Never, Winter. I'm mad at myself. Why? Last night should have never happened. I was crushed. My heart felt like it was bottoming out. We had shared a night of passion and warmth, and he wished it had never been. Emotions were battling within me to see which would dominate. Anger was slamming sadness to the ground at the moment. He could sense that he was about to get blasted. Look, Winter, chances are not good that we're all going to make it through the next few months, and obviously the odds are even worse for me. So let me get this straight. You're saying we shouldn't be truly together because we won't be able to stay together forever. Is that about right? I don't know if I would have used those words, but yeah, something like that. I knew boys were thick. I just never realized how thick, I told him. Isn't it better that we were at least able to share a moment? No matter what happens from here on out, we'll always have that. I guess. It just all seems so futile. What kind of future can we expect? Tallow stopped with me. Future? I laughed. I couldn't think of a better emotion. Tallow, we've never had a future. I don't even know what tomorrow is going to bring. It's important that we live in this moment. There is nothing beyond that. After what we've been through, we're lucky to be standing here right now, and it's impossible to foretell what comes next. I don't think it's worth wasting today worrying about something we cannot possibly know. I guess that's where we're different, Winter. I can't stop thinking about it. And then there's the worst possible outcome. What's that? I asked, lifting his sagging chin. What if something happens to you? His eyes were glistening with the foreshadowing of tears. Then you'll continue on and do whatever it takes to make it right. Is that what you'll do if something happens to me? He asked. What else can we do? How can you be so cavalier about this? We're talking about each other's lives. Tallow, I care for you, and my sincerest hope is that nothing worse than a hangnail befalls you. But if it does, I will do my best to make sure whatever sacrifices we endure are well worth it. I don't think there's a bigger sacrifice than we have already laid on the table. You're not looking at the entire problem. Our lives, the lives of everyone we know, are only a drop in the bucket. I heard the words as I said them, and they had the ring of truth to them. So then why were my knees suddenly weak? If Tallow were to die, I think I would just lie atop his body until I joined him. Why couldn't I find it in myself to tell him that? I knew that was what he so desperately wanted to hear. There was a shift going on here, and it had been happening in fits and starts since we had started training with Brody. Tallow had always been the older, wiser, stronger one, the one with all the answers, the one that got us food when we were hungry. That had been slowly changing. Now I found myself taking charge in most matters. Instead of objecting, Tallow seemed to be fine with his newly demoted position. Cedar neither led nor followed. She was content to just carry on, as long as she could read a book. Hey, Cedar, I had to yell out. Tallow and I had stopped by the hole. Oh, right, she said about 10 yards past. Oops. Just getting to the good part. The library was already lit up. I was surprised to see Brody sitting on the bench. Nice of you to show up. Hi, Brody. Cedar was flapping her eyelids like she was preparing for flight. Got something in your eye? Brody asked, coming over. He tilted her head back and looked into them. Looks clear. I want you to train with Tallow today, Cedar. Me and Princess have some work to do. Cedar looked deflated. I almost asked Brody if it would be all right if we switched. It might have been a good thing we didn't, though. Most likely I'd feel the need to go easy on Tallow, or beat him into submission. Either way, he would surely notice, and I didn't know if he could take it right now. "You ready?" Brody asked, as we faced off. I knew better than to take my eyes off him. I only needed to be hit 6 or 7 times before I'd learned that lesson. He lunged at me. I was able to deflect him away easily enough. He kept pressing the attack as I kept backing up. His hits came in quicker and quicker, the steel vibrating rapidly. I was successful in stopping most of his attacks. Every once in a while he would break through and hit me in different places with the flat of his blade. I cried out in pain the first time, but when I saw Tallow break from Cedar to help, I decided I wouldn't do that again, no matter how much it hurt. If he was busy worrying about what was going to happen to me, he'd never be careful with himself. "Stop thinking. Just react," Brody said, as he hit the side of my thigh. My leg almost folded in on itself from the blow. The pain was blistering. But it also had the effect of blotting everything else out, until it was just my adversary and me. No library, no Tallow or Cedar, and certainly no future. It was here. It was now. "That's it," Brody said. A small part of me was happy to see sweat on his brow. Somehow his sword was moving faster and faster. I was having difficulty tracking the blur of metal as it sliced through the air. I expected to receive more impacts. Then something strange began to happen. My mind knew Brody wasn't going any slower, but I was beginning to clearly track his blade. Things began to slow down all around me. What was once just a glint of steel flashing past now took shape and definition. I could see the shining whorls within the metal itself where it had been folded over as it was forged. I could make out individual pits, minor imperfections, damage resulting from battle or practice. "What's happening?" I heard myself ask. I had not realized I'd spoken aloud until Brody answered. "It's called time dilation," he said. He may have been wearing a smile. "How are you making everything move so slowly?" I was turning his attack away with ease now. I could almost anticipate his blade's path. For the first time ever, I was going on the offensive. The bench screeched against the tile floor as Brody backed away from me and pushed it aside. "It's all you," he struggled to say. "Your brain is sped up to make everything else appear slower, to give you a better chance at survival. I thought you might have it that first night when you lost track of time holding your sword up, but now, I'm sure."
"How? Why?"
"Those are questions I cannot answer," he huffed. "Be thankful you can do it, because it will go a long way to ensuring your survival in what is to come. But be warned. Just because you can see everything slowed down does not mean you are super fast." For a very real demonstration of my limitations, he shouted over to Cedar. They had both stopped what they were doing to watch us sparring. "Cedar, strike Tallow!" Brody shouted. In my peripheral vision, I watched as Cedar's hand tightened its grip on her hilt. I watched as the muscles in her neck rippled with the nerve impulses sent from her brain down through her shoulders, forearms, into her fingers. I watched her arm rise. I wanted to call out to Tallow, who was just now reacting to what was already in motion. I turned to shield him from the blow he was about to receive, but I was slammed sideways at about the same time as Tallow took a brutal slap from Cedar's blade. We fell to the ground. My body laid out so that we were staring face to face, albeit upside down, to each other.
"How, Winter? You were winning."
"What did I just tell you?" Brody was screaming. "Now you're both dead. You have a chance, Winter. Maybe even Cedar."
"Gee, thanks," she answered.
"And me? Am I just in the way?" Tallow asked.
"I didn't say that. But Winter cannot sacrifice herself for you. None of you can. There's only the three of you. Let's take a break.
Cedar had her book out before Brody was halfway up the ladder.
I'm fine, thanks for asking, Tallow said to Cedar, who summarily ignored him.
She had nailed him pretty good in the shoulder. Brody had got me in my exposed ribs. Had he not pulled up, I was convinced he would have cracked at least one of them. As it was, they were pretty sore. I sat up with a grunt.
You gonna tell me what that was all about? Tallow asked as he helped me to my feet.
I walked over and sat down next to Cedar. I was breathing heavily, and it was painful to do so. I was pretty sure Brody had called a break because I'd winded him as well. He just didn't want to admit it.
I honestly don't know. One second Brody's blade was moving so fast I couldn't even see it. The next it was moving so slow I could read the maker's mark on it.
You two were talking, but it was impossible to tell what you were saying. It was so fast. I felt uncomfortable under his scrutiny. He was already looking at me differently. This was just going to be one more wedge between us. Instead of getting closer, we seemed to be drifting apart, which made no sense, especially after last night.
We were talking fast?
It was weird. I almost thought it was a different language, and then I started to recognize some of what you were saying.
And the swords. You were holding your own against Brody. How is that even possible?
I shrugged my shoulders, the movement causing me to wince.
You all right?
I had not even noticed that Brody had come back in. He was on the ladder about to step onto the floor. He'd been watching me.
Hurts, was my one-word reply. You'd be dead if I were your enemy.
I wanted to tell him that my ribs had him squarely pegged as an unfriendly.
You ready for round two?
He didn't wait for my response.
You and me, Cedar.
She sighed as she put down her book. Tallow and I were the walking wounded, and our lesson showed it. He could barely lift his arm, and I was having a difficult time breathing. Cedar appeared to be doing just fine. I think she was a little angry because Brody had taken her away from her book. She was going after him with a vengeance, probably hoping if she got a good shot in on him, she'd be able to sit back down. When we were finally given the okay that the day was over, Brody pulled me to the side.
Listen, princess, you're the key here. A time may come when one or both of your friends will have to sacrifice themselves to save you. Don't look away, look at me. Tough decisions may have to be made. You have got to get that through your thick skull. All your talent will need to be focused on one thing, your survival.
I don't want this, Brody. How can I possibly stand by and watch either of them die if it comes to that?
Because none of this will matter in the least if you die. You'll just be another statistic on the ledger of the countless others that have died for this useless war, and you cannot allow that to happen. The sooner you wrap your head around that, the better.
I wanted to cry. I just wanted to drop to the floor and drown myself in tears of exhaustion and self-pity.
Cedar and Tallow were already topside. We went up to join them. Cedar was looking down into her book, and Tallow was looking up into the setting sun. Brody walked past them without saying a word.
He already thinks we're dead, Tallow said solemnly to me.
It's not that at all. I tried to grab his arm, but he pulled back just far enough from me to keep the contact at bay.
We both know, Winter, that you've never been much of a liar.
I clamped my mouth shut because anything I said now he would see through. Better to leave some things unsaid.
As we got back into town, we could hear some yelling coming from the training grounds. Cedar went back to Tallow's apartment. Tallow and I decided to go check out what was going on.
What are they doing? I asked.
There was no parrying, thrusting, or footwork. The kids were merely being instructed to keep the sword up in front of them, like an ineffectual shield. On command, they were told to slash left, right, up, or down, but there was no context, as no one was attacking them. They were just randomly slicing through the air.
Wouldn't we all stand a better chance of survival if we taught them how to fight? Tallow asked me.
We were sitting on a wall overlooking the grounds.
people would start to wonder how we knew so much, and eventually Brody would be implicated. I'd trade Brody for all of them, or even some of them. He had a point. For most of my life, I considered Brody the epitome of all that was wrong in my world. And now what? He wasn't my friend. Ally, maybe. He was the enemy of my enemy, but that certainly didn't make us friends. And to make it even more confusing, we really didn't know who the enemy was. If Brody were to get caught somehow, would he roll over on us as fast and casually as Tallow seemingly wanted to? You know, if the overseers somehow believe we have an unfair advantage, they could make us go to the war without weapons, I said. Why would they do that, Winter? I mean, I know that's what Brody's been feeding us, but why would the overseers send us in without weaponry? That makes no sense. How could they expect us to win? Are you not listening, Tallow? Your hatred for Brody is clouding your judgment. The overseers don't care who wins, or if anyone wins. They're playing all sides. I don't know why yet, but I plan to live long enough to find out, and maybe even give a little payback. I think your mind is clouded, Winter. Those people down there, they're not disposable. They're our friends, our neighbors, the people that live in our village with us, not just characters in your story to be needlessly sacrificed. He jumped down off the wall and headed toward those who were practicing. He was walking around, adjusting some of the people's grips and offering a couple of words of advice or encouragement. I watched for a few more minutes before deciding to leave. Dusk was settling over the area. I really didn't have a destination in mind as I walked. "Where are you going, Princess?" A shadow emerged from an alley. I just about jumped out of my skin. I was hoping that it was dark enough that Brody didn't notice. "She's a pretty one. Shame she has chosen to go to war. Such a waste." Another broker came out of the shadows. "Would you like a kiss before you die?" the broker said as he approached. I looked over his shoulder, trying to gauge Brody's reaction. It was clear he wasn't going to do anything about it. He was watching, but seemingly half-heartedly. "Kissing is against the law," I said. The broker laughed. "I'm a broker. I make the laws. So tonight, kissing is legal." A few months ago, I would have believed him. "Princess, my friend Pex here wants a kiss. What are you going to do about it?" Was he challenging me? I sensed he was. But for what reason? "Come here," Peck said, somewhere between angrily and wantonly. "It's dark where you're standing. I'd like to see who wants to kiss me." "I told you, Brody," Peck said, smiling. Adrenaline surged through my system. My mind immediately sped everything up, and in the next heartbeat slowed everything down. As Peck stepped up to me, I could see his lips begin to pucker and his pupils dilate with desire. Blood was rushing to the surface of his face, causing his unshaven whiskers to rise imperceptibly, his skin to redden. My first punch hit him flush in the mouth. He was still recoiling from the impact when, with my left hand, I struck his Adam's apple. His knees shook as he nearly collapsed. His right arm came up in a feeble attempt to thwart my attack. I pushed it aside and struck him again, this time on the side of his jaw. Bloody spittle flew out in long ribbons. Pex was descending toward the ground, knees first, in almost comical slow motion. I was pulling back to kick him for all I was worth in an area he thought was worth it all. "Enough," Brody said. "Pex, get your sorry ass back to the barracks."
"What about her?"
He was nearly crying. "What about her? You attempted to break the law and she defended herself. Do you want me to arrest her and let everyone know she just handed you your ass?"
"We could say there were five of them."
"I'm not going to do the paperwork and then send men out to find four more little girls that jumped a broker."
"You're lucky."
Pex pointed his finger at me. "Lucky you didn't kiss me?" I asked. "I'd have to agree." He snarled before limping back toward the barracks. "You did pretty good, Princess."
What the hell was that all about?
I was shaking from the confrontation. I just wanted to test you in a real-life situation.
He could have killed me.
Let's try not to be too dramatic. He was trying to kiss you, not cut your throat. I wanted to see how quickly you could turn on your gift if Anita rose. Just be happy it wasn't Larico. Now, he might have tried to kill you.
Yeah, and my kick would have landed. So, happy with the results? I asked sarcastically.
Very. We heard some voices approaching. The war practice session had ended, and the participants were heading home.
Get in here, he motioned to the alley. You're not going to try and kiss me, are you?
I haven't kissed anyone in a good long while, and I don't intend on breaking that streak now.
I joined him in the shadows, now almost invisible to any but the most prying of eyes.
What's the real reason for this visit, Brody?
He hesitated only a moment.
You need to break it off with Tallow.
Break what off?
I was going with the ignorance card.
I can smell the stink of it on the both of you.
What?
Love, lusts, whatever you want to call it. It has its own unique smell, and you two are both doused in it. As a matter of fact, so is Cedar, but I haven't figured out with whom yet.
I couldn't help myself. I snorted.
Something funny?
Sort of.
Even if something is going on between me and Tallow, why do I need to stop?
Spoken like a true teenage girl. Admit to nothing.
I'll tell you why. It will get you both killed. Plain and simple. It's a distraction you can ill afford.
I think that's my choice to make, I said hotly.
Not really. First of all, you know bonding is illegal. More importantly, your feelings are putting everyone at risk.
I can only hope that you don't come to that realization too late.
What good is this gift if I can't help those around me?
You already know the answer to that question.
Yeah. I'll be safe to live a long life with the grief of watching my friends die and the guilt of not saving them at all costs.
Don't be so selfish, Princess. This isn't all about you.
His words stung.
I knew it wasn't all about me, but thinking as me, that was who I was primarily concerned about.
I don't even understand this stupid gift. It allows me to see things at a super slow rate, yet I cannot move any faster. How does that give me any sort of advantage over an opponent?
The body telegraphs.
Telegraphs?
I'd never heard the word before.
The body communicates what it is going to do next in subtle yet obvious enough ways. We all use this to gauge the movement of others. You've witnessed it yourself. You can tell which way a person may swing a sword by the muscle groups that begin to bunch on an arm, or which direction your opponent will turn by the way their feet move. Knowing what your enemy is going to do is a huge advantage, and you can see so much more than most of us. It may only give you milliseconds of a head start, but that will be the difference between life and death.
When did you know you had it?
I thought the question might startle him.
It didn't. I was about to die. It was my 33rd day of the war. I'd been separated from my platoon after a particularly nasty ambush. I'd taken a spear through the meaty part of my leg and could hardly walk. I was looking to replace the poultice I had on the wound to keep it from festering. It was the same season as it is now, but there was a full moon. I was grabbing some aloe leaves when this Klondike came over a small ridge in front of me. Couldn't have been more than 10 feet away. I had a stick under my left arm, using it as a crutch to keep from having to put pressure on my leg. My sword was in its scabbard attached to my belt. If he had just rushed me right there, I wouldn't have even had enough time to pull it free. I think he was just as surprised to see me as I was to see him. He looked around, wondering if I was alone. When he didn't motion for anyone to follow him, I figured he was alone as well.
Good thing, too.
What happened? I interrupted.
You do know I'm not done yet, right?
Sorry, I get a little anxious.
At some point before running into me, he must have lost his own weapon. Klondikes traditionally fight with spears or longswords, but he was carrying a Hylian sword. And that, more than anything, made me angry. I wasn't afraid that I was going to die. I was just pissed off that he'd had the audacity to take a Hylian sword and use it against me.
I think it was that rage that triggered the change in me, or turned it on, I guess, is a better choice of words. At first I couldn't figure out what was going on. He was moving so slowly it looked like he was underwater, a particularly thick water. As my hand reached for my sword, I realized it wasn't that he was moving slowly, it was that I was observing it that way. It took what seemed like forever to pull my sword free, yet he had advanced only a couple of feet. I could tell he did not feel very comfortable with his weapon. The weight and heft of it was throwing off his balance. His muscles struggled to find equilibrium. I'd never observed that in anyone before. I was processing this information with lightning speed, but I couldn't will myself to act 1 second faster. It was infuriating. Then I calmed myself down. I was able to hyper-focus. I began to think out my strategy, how I was going to use his weaknesses to my advantage without exposing my own weakness to him. This is terrifying, Brody. It's one thing sparring with my friends. I don't think I'll be able to handle an environment where everyone is trying to kill me. I think you'll be magnificent. I blushed and stuttered. Well, what happened with the Klondike? If you'd stop interrupting me, I'd already be done, and we could both go enjoy some dinner. I nodded. I think my new friend knew I was injured. Although I had drawn my sword, I was obviously favoring the leg, and I hadn't really moved all that much. He began to toss his sword from hand to hand, taunting me, showing me how good he was. I knew it for the ruse that it was, but his inexperience still trumped my injury. I watched the slight but rhythmic patterns of muscle movements each time he was about to change the hilt from one hand to the other. I noted the half-second gap in between. I dragged my leg forward and poked the sword out of his reach, just as it flew from his right hand, heading for the left. He closed his hand around nothing. That was, of course, until I drove the point of my blade through his stomach. Then he wrapped both hands around that. My stomach was turning so violently I felt as if I were the one getting run through. This was war. It was the ability to survive at all costs, the willingness to take life from another. Want to know what else I learned that day? I nodded. There's no moonlight, Winter. I can't tell whether you nodded to agree or shook your head to decline. Yes. My wound had stopped producing pus. Sorry? Had I missed something? How are your ribs? He asked. A little sore, but not horrible. I cracked one of them, he told me. On purpose, I might add. Oh, I know you're looking at me funny. I can almost feel it. I did it because I had to prove exactly this point. There's something with the time dilation that speeds up your ability to heal. It won't do anything if you catch a spear through your heart, but bleeding wounds and broken bones will heal at an accelerated pace. How accelerated? I don't know. I'm not in the habit of injuring myself with the hope of seeing how quickly I can be fixed. It all goes back to why, Brody. Why are we able to do this? It's a natural gift, Winter, and for whatever reason, you have it. I think if we had more time, we'd really be able to see how deep it goes. What more we could do. As it is, we're almost on the same level. But by next month, I'll be doing all I can to fend you off. As for why, I think that's an easy enough answer. I was meant to survive so I could find you and set you on the right path. As to where that path leads, well, you're going to have to figure that out on your own. Seems to me you got the harder part of this bargain. He laughed. I'll see you tomorrow. And don't beat up any more of my brokers. Tell them to behave and there won't be a problem. Remember, Princess, get rid of Tallow, or it will be the end of you both. As opposed to just him? I asked. But Brody didn't answer. He had already turned and was heading toward the back of the alley. When I got home, Tallow wasn't there, and Cedar was crying inconsolably on the couch. What's the matter? I asked, rushing over toward her. He left, was all she managed to blubber out. How could Talo have known I intended to end our relationship? And where could he go that I couldn't find him? Distance was big, but it wasn't that big. I knew every hiding spot, and I could track his clues if he went off into the wild, plucked berries, blood trails from hunted game, cold cooking fires. It would be easy enough. When? When did Talo leave? Did he say anything? Cedar looked over at me with a confused expression. Talo? Oh, Cedar, you've got to be kidding me. Are you talking about your damned books again? Patrick left her at the altar, Winter, Cedar sobbed. What could have possibly happened that he would do that? Cedar, it's a book. I don't even know what an altar is, so I have no idea why he'd leave her there. It's a place inside a church. It's where two people are united from individuals into a couple forevermore. So, just to be clear, we're not talking about Talo. What? No, he hasn't even come home, and why would he leave? Seems to me he'd have even more reason to come back. Then her eyes narrowed. Why? What's going on? Nothing. Nothing, I said, standing, trying to get away from her inquisitive gaze. Oh my gosh, Winter, you're lying to me. No, I'm not. I was trying to make a hasty retreat down the hallway. You so are, she accused, getting up to follow me. What is she lying about? Talo asked from the doorway. Cedar and I both turned to look at him. We wore very similar expressions of guilt, as if we had just been caught stealing something. Nothing, Cedar said, heading back toward the couch. Have you been crying? He asked. Cedar sheepishly pointed to the book she'd been reading. A book did that. What's so surprising about that? A book made us revolt against the brokers. Then a book made a broker join in our quest to discover the truth, I said. He thought about it for a moment. Got me on that one. Cry away, Cedar. Patrick left her on the altar. Or was it at the altar? She sighed sadly, before once again burying her nose in the pages. Winter, I'd like to talk to you. Talo had followed me into the bedroom. I was torn between pulling him close to kiss him furiously and shoving him away. How could this be fair? What? I asked. My mixed feelings showed in my response as I snapped it at him. God, you're beautiful. I can't even begin to believe I'm about to do this. I could feel my mind wanting to slip into dilation mode. I had to consciously keep it from doing so. Seems my mind knew something harmful was coming before I did, even if that made absolutely no sense. He gulped. I think now that we're no longer under house arrest that you and Cedar should, maybe move back to your own places. I wanted to punch him in the head. Then I wanted to tenderly stroke the place I would have punched him. He'd done the hard part for me, so why was I so angry with him? Was it because he'd set the terms? Could I be that shallow? I started picking up my clothes without saying a word. Talk to me, Winter. Yell at me. Do something. I guess this is for the best, was all I could think to say as I grabbed an armload of my belongings and headed out. Where's she going? Cedar asked. Home wasn't far. At least not physically. Mentally, it seemed to traverse worlds. It was a gulf between me and Talo that I knew could never be bridged again. The distance seemed like miles, and when I finally got home, I noticed for the first time how completely empty my apartment was. I sat on my hard bed and buried my head in my hands. I fought to hold the tears back. And when I realized that that was a losing battle, I let them cascade down. Brody stopped by, Cedar said from the other room. I hadn't even noticed her entrance. My eyes were so blurry and puffy from my extended cry. Brought some food, and, oh yeah, Talo kicked me out. I thought I could live here. I didn't say anything as I went to grab a heel of bread and some cured meat. Chapter 11. Departure. I focused all of my energy on my lessons and crowded out all other feelings and emotions. Despite what Brody's motivations were, my goal was to become so good that I would be able to keep my friends safe. Every time I felt that I'd climbed another step, Brody would give me a smack on some sensitive body part just to let me know how far I still had to go. A census was taken 2 weeks before we were to head out, to get an accurate count. I was in line with the rest of the 254 souls. Tallow was a few rows ahead of Cedar and me. He was joking and laughing with his circle of friends, as if they were not in line to be sent to their deaths. Cedar and I got more than a few looks from those around us. First off, because we were women. Only 6 out of the 254 were, but also many of them knew we weren't coming up on 18. It wasn't illegal to go in early. It had been done before, but usually as punishment for some heinous crime. No one willingly cut a year off an already shortened life. That cycle, 12 18-year-olds who did not want to report had to be hunted down. The brokers only had to find 7, as the other 5 had been turned in by the population at large for more rations. Those 12 would be held in cells until deployment. The rest of us would be required to stay in the staging barracks. They were metal buildings, long and narrow with curved roofs. It would be the first time that many of us would eat to our heart's content, sort of like an extended last meal. I considered it fattening us up before the slaughter. Drills were intensified for those housed there, but Brody would find alternate duties for Cedar and me, so we could go and suffer his tutelage. Tallow had declined to join us anymore, opting to stay with his male friends. Our chances of success had diminished considerably with his leaving our group, not that our chances were great to begin with. Brody thought otherwise. He considered Tallow to be the anchor that was weighing us down. I didn't find out until much later, but that was exactly the reason Tallow had left. Brody had told him as much. I'd felt betrayed every time I saw Tallow in passing. He would barely acknowledge my existence. Even though we were in the same building, our encounters were limited. Brody had Cedar and me, training nearly 12 hours a day. I barely had the strength to eat by the time the day was over. Most times we'd come back soaked in sweat, battered and bruised. Most of the other combatants would be in their racks, either sleeping or talking quietly to those around them. Tallow had been giving lessons to any that would take them. Most flatly refused, believing, like all teenagers, that they were somehow immune to death. At least he was trying to help. I often wanted to go over and correct some of the things he was doing, or at least help out, but I didn't think he would appreciate the advice, and, more likely, think it a slight. No matter if the technique wasn't right, it was still better than the garbage the brokers were showing them. Sometimes I believed they wanted us to fail. The days blurred into each other, so when departure day actually came, it was almost a surprise. I should have picked up on the heightened anxiety within the barracks, but I'd just been too exhausted. "I'm going to miss the library," Cedar said, as the brokers assembled us into a loose formation, and we began the long march to the gate. A few of the younger children stood to the side and watched us as we left. Some waved to friends they'd made. I thought about Pocky and how he'd been so altered by the war. None of the older ones came out. They didn't want to be reminded of what was coming for them. Sadness seemed to settle over the whole town. It was strange to be on the receiving end. I knew that I'd always felt bad for those who were leaving. Everyone knew we would probably never be seen or heard from again. I guess they thought having no real family made our leaving easier. Perhaps that was why the overseers had dissolved that particular bond. We loved our friends, but maybe blood relatives would be more likely to question the wanton destruction of their kin. It was a 15-mile hike east from the town to get to the gate. At least 3 that I'd noticed had fallen during the trek. 2 were half-carried. 1 unlucky soul had stumbled and broken his ankle. I watched as Tallow rushed over to help the screaming boy. A broker came over to see what was the matter. "Get away," he told Tallow. "I can help him," Tallow entreated. The broker pushed against the boy's ankle with the toe of his boot. The piercing scream stopped the whole column.
"Who the hell said to stop moving?" another broker shouted. "His ankle is broken!"
The broker was lightly stepping on the ankle and rolling it back and forth. Apparently going into shock, the face of the boy on the ground went from fiery red to ghost pale. His screams had been silenced when he finally passed out. I was close enough I could hear the grinding of bone on bone as the broker kept moving his foot. Tallow was enraged. I could see his fists clenching and unclenching. The broker was looking intently at Tallow, almost daring him to do something about it. When the broker realized we had nearly passed him by, he chambered around in his rifle and shot the boy in the head. I'd stopped a good 10 yards away, hoping I'd be able to intercept Tallow if he decided to do something stupid.
Better than being eaten by the ferals, the broker laughed caustically.
Roll him into the ditch, he told Tallow.
What about the Metis? Aren't they going to come and get him?
Are you serious? Roll him into the ditch. It gives the animals something to eat. It's that whole circle of life thing.
Tallow bent over and grabbed the boy under the arms and pulled him toward the side of the road.
Hurry up. We don't have all day. I need to get back and get some lunch.
Tallow let him down as gently as possible and seemed to have muttered a few words over the body before nearly brushing up against the broker as he passed.
Be careful, he warned Tallow. It'd be a shame if you started a war with a bullet in you.
Tallow was approaching me. I'm sorry, I told him. He passed by without saying anything, a grim look on his face.
Cedar had waited for me at the tail end of the long line.
Is he all right? She asked.
You know as much as I do, I told her.
Nothing more happened as we walked, except the constant draining away of morale. We had started with a few laughs and jokes, some talking about what we were going to do once we came back, now famous for our exploits in the war. Each step took more and more merriment from the collective, so that once we began to see the pickets, it was more like a funeral procession. We slowed to a crawl, and the murmurings began to pick up as a nervous energy arose. Most had some trepidations about leaving the only place they'd ever known, but there were a few that vocalized their specific fear about trying to go through the pickets. We all knew what happened when someone tried to cross over the boundary. The current that ran through them would liquefy a part of our brain. Death was not instantaneous. Repeatedly, it was among the most painful ways to die.
They're leading us here to die, Ash, a boy I knew a little, shouted out.
The war is a lie, and so are the pickets. They're fake. They're just a way to keep us in, to keep us under control. Has anyone actually seen anybody die by the pickets?
Shut up, one of the brokers told him.
I agreed with Ash that the war was a lie, but not in the way he was thinking.
Suddenly I wondered if dissent among the population was more widespread than we had previously known.
What did he know that we didn't?
I'm not going. Ash sat in the middle of the roadway as the rest of us walked around him.
The broker that had shot the boy with the broken ankle came over.
Get up, I urged him.
No, he said petulantly.
He'll kill you, Ash.
I was pulling on his arm.
Cedar, help me.
He's going to get us killed, Winter, Cedar said as she grabbed the boy's other arm.
I don't know how he was doing it, but we could barely move him. It was as if he was turning his blood to lead. If I hadn't known better, I would have thought he had sent roots into the ground.
The broker was close.
Get your ass up, I snapped.
What do we have here?
A squatter.
The broker was smiling.
Took a while this year.
Hey, Kinsley, we got a squatter.
Oh, good. I thought for a minute there it wasn't going to happen, Grouper, Kinsley said, coming over.
The column had passed us by. It was now just Cedar and myself, Ash firmly anchored to the ground, and now two brokers.
Get away from him, Grouper told us.
He'll get up, I said.
No, he won't. They never do.
Not without help, anyway.
Get away now, or you'll join him.
I straightened up and was nearly face to face with the broker.
Come on, Winter, let's go, Cedar said, as she tugged on my arm.
Yeah, right. What are you going to do, little girl?
The broker smiled. Fury threatened to overwhelm me. Turning to Cedar, he said,
Take your friend away. I don't like the way she's looking at me. I'm liable to do just about anything to defend myself. I'm so scared right now. Cedar nearly wrenched my arm from my socket, pulling at me. I left my spot, but not exactly willingly.
"Hey, squatter. Time to get up," Grouper said.
I turned to watch as Kinsley forced Ash further into the ground with his boot on his head.
"Get up, squatter," Kinsley said as he twisted his foot around.
The boy's face was scraping against the hard-packed road. The louder he cried out, the harder Kinsley seemed to grind.
"Let him up," Grouper said, motioning with his hand.
Kinsley removed his foot. Ash sat up and wiped some ground-in stones from the side of his pale young face.
A dozen abrasions wept blood.
"Are you ready to join the troop?" Grouper asked, almost tenderly. The boy looked up. Fear dominated every aspect of him as he shook his head in negation.
"Hell, they never are. Get Moreland and Hensel over here to take this piece of crap to the pickets."
"No!" Ash screamed.
"What's your name, son?" Grouper asked.
Ash.
"Well, Ash, this is your lucky day." Grouper was smiling again. It was the smirk of the demented, though. He was someone who found great satisfaction in the suffering of others, especially if he caused it.
Brody had told us that all of the brokers were survivors of the war, and that usually only the worst or the best that society had to offer ever made it out. The worst, I could see, accounted for about 90% of that statistic. I had once thought Brody was the worst that the brokers had to offer. How could I have been so wrong? He'd warned me that things like this would happen during the march, and that I should in no way intervene. I'd asked him why he wouldn't come on the march. If he did, then he could stop stuff like this from happening. He'd let his head drop as he told me that it was tradition. The lead broker was to stay behind, while his men blew off steam on the recruits. It was sometimes the only thing that kept them from unleashing their pent-up fury on the ones that remained behind.
"It's tradition to torture the damned," I'd railed on him.
"There are some things he can't understand.
You could stop this. You lead them."
That's a tenuous thing at best, and I've already stretched my hold to the breaking point this year. When I didn't bring anybody to justice for the deaths of my men, they knew something was up. And all that time I spent gone with you three. I'm lucky there wasn't a mutiny. If I don't let this hazing happen, they'll most likely kill me. I didn't say anything.
"I will take your silence as that being acceptable to you. You don't get it. They'd kill me on that march, and then have at you. Only this time they wouldn't have any constraints at all upon their actions. Right now they still need to report to me at the end of the day and let me know how many went to war. A few here and there are acceptable losses. A huge loss, and they would be held accountable. With no one there to check up on them, they would be savage. Just make the march and keep your head down. I think you're just scared to make a stand." I was so mad at him, I was shaking with rage. I left his office, slamming the door behind me. Moreland grabbed Ash by the head as Kinsley and Hensel each grabbed a leg. At first, Ash did nothing, opting, I think, for the dead weight trick that he had employed with such great success against me and Cedar. Once Ash figured out where they were taking him, he began to struggle. Kicking his legs out, he hit Kinsley in the groin. I silently cheered at the broker's shout of pain, up until the point that he smashed his fist into Ash's nose, spewing blood everywhere and causing it to lay flat against his face. The force of the impact pushed his head free from Moreland's grasp, where it dropped heavily to the ground. His hands covered up his ruined appendage. "Don't ever kick me," Kinsley was screaming, spit flying from his mouth and covering Ash's hands.
Kinsley rained down more blows on his head.
"Come on, man, stop. You'll kill him before we have our fun," Moreland grabbed at Kinsley, who pulled away.
Ash cried out as Kinsley made contact one more time.
"That's enough. You've had your payback," Grouper said.
Apparently he was the leader of this miserable parade.
"He kicked me in my privates," Kinsley whined.
That's pretty impressive for the kid. He must have some unbelievable aim, Grouper joked. Hansel and Moreland both guffawed. Kinsley turned beet red and then half-heartedly kicked at Ash before he took a couple of steps away. "Get up," Grouper told the boy.